Welcome to It's All Journalism. I'm Megan Cloherty, joined here by Michael O'Connell. And today our guest is Dan Oshinsky. On his blog, Dan describes himself as a reporter, an entrepreneur, a lover of startups, frequent troublemaker, and builder of awesome stuff. But his main interest is telling stories. Oshinsky's current focus is story.us. That's STRY.US. It's a startup that grew out of a reporting project through his work as a Reynolds Fellow at the University of Missouri School of Journalism. Welcome, Dan, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name's Dan Oshinsky. I am a reporter and troublemaker and builder of awesome stuff, self-proclaimed, and some other people have said nice things, too. I'm the guy behind Story.us, which is this long-form news experiment I started back in 2010, actually in Biloxi, Mississippi on the Gulf Coast, covering Katrina 5 years later. Out of that came this amazing fellowship at the University of Missouri, the Reynolds Journalism Institute, RJI. And then out of that came this reporting project this summer down in Springfield, Missouri, me and a team of five reporters covering the Ozarks, tapping into big issues and the issues and things on people's minds coming up to this election. And I've also written for places like the Rocky Mountain News, covered the Beijing Olympics for them back in 2008. And then there's a whole journalism history before that of a variety of places here in the D.C. area and around the East Coast.
So tell me about Story.us. How did you decide to come up with this? How did you start the ball rolling on that?
I had been working for a CBS station in San Antonio, Texas, Ken's 5 TV. And I'd been looking across the Gulf Coast region, looking east, because the Katrina anniversary was coming up. This was the summer of 2010. The five-year anniversary was coming up. I had been down there a couple months after Katrina and down in New Orleans and had seen a lot of the destruction and the devastation, and it had really stuck with me. And when the five-year anniversary came around, I started looking for stories about where they were 5 years later, how were they building back, and I wasn't seeing them because at the same time, there was a small oil spill happening in the Gulf, you may remember. There was also some issues with the economy, and people were just not all that focused on 5 years later where these folks were. But it mattered a great deal to them, it turned out. So I was really frustrated with that, and it just stuck with me over a period of months, and I decided I had to go to Mississippi to do some reporting, dig into this, into some of the issues down there, see where they were, and talk to folks, try to tell some interesting stories. And so I left my job at the CBS station to go do that, did this big reporting project, a lot of long-form stories. It was just me down there in an apartment in Biloxi, Mississippi for a summer. I don't recommend leaving your job, moving to Mississippi in July. I just carried a towel around with me most days.
So what were you doing? You just bringing a recorder, video camera, paper pen? What was it you were trying to?
It depended on the day. I spent a lot of time, me and my cameras. I have a Canon and two Canons, and brought my cameras around and brought my recorder around and my notepad and talked to anybody who wanted to talk to me. I would meet folks at city council meetings and events around town. People always had stories. It turned out there was no shortage of stories down there. Everyone wanted to talk, especially I was in Biloxi, Mississippi, and all the coverage on Katrina centered around New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And understandably so. They had an incredible amount of destruction, loss of life. It was a catastrophe there in New Orleans, but also along the Gulf Coast. A lot of people died, just billions of dollars in losses. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a ton of media coverage on the Gulf Coast because all the media went to New Orleans. And these folks really felt left out. They felt like they had a story to tell and they weren't getting a chance to tell it. And they were excited to meet me, despite the fact they had no idea who I was. And they had never heard of my site before. They really wanted to talk.
Then you went in for the fellowship. Is that what happened next?
Yeah, what happened was I did this three-month reporting project. And I did it the way you would do if you decided, I'm a little pissed off about what's happening with this state of reporting on the Gulf Coast. I'm going to leave my job and go there. And did it. And then I got to the end in October and I went, so what am I supposed to do now? Mm-hmm. I had this idea in my head that I was going to take this and build it into a large news syndicate, kind of like the Associated Press. So I would be able to do stories like this. I would pull together a small team of reporters. We would syndicate the content, and newspapers around the country would just open
just
their checkbooks to me. Dan, we love what you're doing. Here's $10,000. Give us some stories, please. And that, you know, maybe 100 or 200 or 500 news outlets around the country would say, this is worthy. Here's $10,000. Here's $20,000. Mm-hmm. suddenly I would have $1 million and all these reporters, and it would just be great. Of course, I hadn't tried a business since that lemonade stand I ran when I was about 12 mm-hmm. years old, which did really well. My siblings and I think we made about $20. That was a strong business effort by us, but no business experience and no real idea of what I was doing or how I was supposed to go about doing it. So what you find is you need to ask for a lot of help pretty quickly, and I needed tons of help. And that's where the fellowship came in.
Right. And that's one of the things I think, you know, every journalist can think of a dream story or something that inspires them that, you know, oh God, if I had, you know, if I had 3 months, I could go and I cover this and really do something wonderful and make a web project or sell, sure. you know, go out. And then at the end of 3 months, you know, everybody's going to want it. You know, there's a lot to be said for going into something with a business plan. Mm-hmm. But then again, you know, the enthusiasm that you obviously had for the project and the feelings that you had around it, it was certainly, you know, that's incredibly valuable.
But I think part of it, too, is I came into it with this expectation that if I did this, everyone would want it, and that it would just be universally accepted as the thing that everyone would love. And people really liked the project. People were incredibly supportive of it. But the things that I wanted to do right at the start in October 2010, I wanted to build a large team. I wanted to have a large stream of revenue coming in. I wanted to have a large network of publishing partners, syndicating content, delivering stories. There was no system in place for me to do any of these things, and no reason to believe in October of 2010 that I had so much as the capability to do any of them, including finding the team, building the team, leading the team.
Yeah, and at the same time, you have to look at what's going on in journalism at that time. That well, people are slashing their staffs. You know, the ad revenue's just drying up. So the going out and paying money for something that's certainly admirable content, you know, you're working against that.
And there's an issue that a lot of journalists have, which is we don't have a great understanding of where our money comes from. What funds us? Go to a newsroom and ask 100 journalists, where does your money come from? And you will get some of the strangest responses. We don't talk about this very often. And so when I looked at syndicating content, I talked to a couple big publishing companies. And the first thing that all of them said was, well, what about sports content, Dan? I said, well, now? I said, well, yeah, if let's say we cut AP and we go with you. We go with Story.us as our new news syndicate for all our national news. And you're going to have these big feature stories and photography and digital content. Everyone's going to love it. But what about sports content? Because we still have people who open the paper who want to know mm-hmm. who won the Nationals game last night. And they want to see the box score. Are you going to give that to us, too? What about fashion content? What about who covers the Emmys? Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know. I'm going to do these really big, deep dives into the state of our, you know, the state of our union, stories about immigration and healthcare and poverty. And you guys are going to love it. And I said, yeah, but what about the national score?
Yeah. The problem with the news outlet is that they're serving so many different people. People come to the newspaper, to the TV station, whatever, for lots of different reasons. And, you know, something like the AP is going to could provide them across the board stuff. So you coming in, you know, I've got all these features on Biloxi, you know, admirable as that story may be, important as that story may be, you know, it's not going to necessarily fit into their business plan.
Absolutely. And the other issue was people kept saying, well, why does this matter to me? And I hadn't really considered that on a large scale. I figured, you know, with Biloxi, this was a story that people were talking about. Katrina, one of the biggest natural disasters in the history of our country. Mm-hmm. People were just going to be interested. Of course they would be interested. They'd seen it on the news. Mm-hmm. They would want these stories. And publishers went, well, I'm in Wichita. Why does this matter to me? Why does this matter to our readers? Mm-hmm. And that really – that started a chain of events over the last 2 years of me really thinking about what are we doing with our stories? Who is our audience? And how do we show them why these stories matter? How do we show impact for local communities, for mm-hmm. a national audience? How do we do that? And that's a conversation that we need to have more of in journalism. How do we take these stories and make them relevant to a lot of different audiences? The sites and the news outlets that do that well are going to do really well going forward in the future because people will be able to buy in. They'll know why they're reading. They'll know why they're listening and watching.
So what's this state of Story.us right now? Do you have reporters and what are you working on?
Well, Story.us, I had this fellowship at RJI, and out of that came a reporting project in Springfield, Missouri this summer. So it was me and a team of 5 reporters that I brought on board. At the start of the year, I kind of laid out my year and I said, you know, I look back at Biloxi. What did I do wrong? What can I do better? because I really got a second chance with RJI and the fellowship to do it again and do it bigger and do it better. So I said I wanted to, you know, build the team. I wanted to lead the team. We wanted to do actual syndication. I hadn't syndicated a story in Biloxi, wanted to work with some news partners, wanted to put on some live events around some of our stories and try to build a stronger community around the stories themselves. And so I brought on four reporters and an editor. The editor, Jordan Hickey, we go back, way back at the University of Missouri, and he has been a tremendous supporter of the project going back all the way to Biloxi, and is a lover of long form and a great editor. And Jordan and I brought on these other four reporters who came from all parts. They came from, two came from Chicago, one came from Montana, one came from Virginia. And they decided to come along for the ride this summer. And they moved their things, their lives down to Springfield, Missouri, where dreams come true. And we set out to do 3.5 months of ambitious reporting on kind of the State of the Union. We had this general theme of an interconnected America. The Ozarks are very removed from the rest of the country, but we started to see some big themes pop up. In the Ozarks, there are these issues from the north, the changing nature of industry, the changing nature of manufacturing and economies and agriculture. From the south, issues like culture, immigration. And the Ozarks are kind of where they come together. They are really where the South and the North and the Midwest collide. Mm. And so we started to see big themes popping up. We said, all right, how do we tell this story for a Springfield audience of what's happening here? And then how do we connect it to what's happening elsewhere? How is a story about the changing nature of manufacturing in Springfield connected to the changing nature of manufacturing in Detroit? So that someone there can open up our site and read a story and go, oh, I don't know that guy, but I kind of do. He's my neighbor. He's my friend. I recognize the themes. And this idea that we are really connected and we're all in this together, trying to bring that together through the lens of Springfield was our goal this summer. We worked with a couple fantastic news partners down there, some weeklies that got it immediately, that wanted to have original content about the people in their communities. We did a lot of stories, not just about Springfield, but the surrounding Ozarks, and worked with some news partners down there. We worked with these amazing folks at the Springfield Green County Library System. And so they jumped on board immediately. They worked with us on this great project, this Letters to Springfield campaign. We asked people to send us a letter. Dear Springfield, tell us what's on your mind. Ask us a big question. Then we put together a panel of some of the news leaders, the big thinkers in Springfield, got them together to answer some of the big questions that were on people's minds. Really, all of this was about telling great stories and building a conversation around the stories. And now we're at the point where I'm trying to take some of the big lessons and get them out into newsrooms. We learned a lot about working with partners, about syndicating content, about building a really great team with ambition. Mm-hmm. And these are all things I think the journalism community can use. We're not putting a lot of money as a whole into experimentation, and this project was all about experimentation.
I kind of want to take a sidestep from the editorial to the design of your website, because it's interesting. And the way they did it is it's a presentation. It's more of like a photographic presentation mm-hmm. when you come to the homepage. But then there's sort of a drop down, and you can choose among these sort of wider ranging subjects?
Or? Yeah, well, there was two things with the design. One is the site is built on something called responsive design, which you're going to hear about more and more. You guys are laughing.
We love responsive design.
Yeah,
yes,
I love responsive. The first time I saw a responsive site back in 2011, I went, oh, this is it. Mm. Because I have my first boss out of college. I worked at this TV station in San Antonio, and my boss, Jan, loved mobile. She was the biggest fan of mobile. She said we need to be pushing content onto mobile. And this was 2009. I just didn't get
pretty
it.
Pretty progressive at that point.
She was very progressive and very ahead of her time on that. Wanting to push mobile, I didn't get it. Back in 2009, I still had a flip phone. I loved my flip phone. I was just not interested in mobile content. And I don't know, maybe a year of hearing Jan talk about mobile, something stuck in there. And I did over the year start to see people are really, you know, you come back to D.C., you're on the subway, you see people reading on their phones, engaging with content on mm-hmm. their phones. This is something. Mm-hmm. You need to pay a little more attention. And then when responsive came around, but the issue back then was you had to build a special mobile site.
Right.
2009, 2010, a special site for mobile. I just didn't have the time. Mm-hmm. But responsive, you can deliver the right content for the right screen. It is a way of delivering one website that works on every single possible screen, tablet, mobile, laptop, desktop, Times Square billboard, wherever you want to put it, you can put it. It just works, and it works well. So we worked with this amazing team out in Dayton, Ohio, the guys at Sparkbox, and they were great. They got it. They wanted to help us build a site. And some of the stuff on our site, we used footnotes really extensively. Mm. Nobody has tried, really nobody had tried to build a responsive site where footnotes were built in, because mm-hmm. the site, when you actually play with it, the content moves around, yeah. and the footnotes, you can't just kind of anchor. They have to move around with the content. It was a huge challenge, and they pulled it off.
It's a really, really sharp looking site.
Thank you.
And you know, sort of plays in and plays to advantages with your visual elements, the photos and you know, just the whole package of it is, it's just something that
thank you.
Is kind of, it draws you in. And right. what's great about it is as you go in deeper than you're dealing with the content, which is really great.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, when you have such great content, it would be difficult, at least for me, when I've worked hard on that many stories, mm-hmm. to then make it a photographic presentation. But it makes so much more sense, because then, like you said, when you dive down into it, you kind of right. get lost in the content, and then you yeah. can explore from there, as opposed to it all sort of being up front, like, this is what we have, you know,
yeah.
it's kind of like, well, overwhelming.
It's overwhelming on news sites.
It's a real challenge, too, for you know, journalists who are working online to try to, you know, you want to do a special project or something, and, you know, you end up, you know, either over-texting it, or you've got too many visuals of people, you know, trying to strike that balance where you can, you've got a presentation that's going to draw people in,
sure.
but that's also going to actually work and accent what you're doing. I mean, that's a challenge.
Yeah, for me, we said early on, we want to tell great stories and present them in a really beautiful way. When people come to the site, we want them to know this is not every news site in the universe. This mm-hmm. is very, very different. Mm-hmm. Our approach to storytelling is different. The type of stories we do is different. My goal with my reporters was to give them as much time as possible to report a story. They needed an extra couple days or an extra couple of weeks even on some
you
of these
like
stories.
A pushover for an editor.
Yeah. We worked really hard to get the deadlines right. We didn't get them perfect, but we worked hard to figure out a system where we could have a lot of stories in the works and move stuff around, so when a story had to get moved or we had to, you know, moved back or moved up, we could make it happen. Get as much time as they needed to report the story. To finish the story and get it done once it was reported, not as much time. And so the site became kind of the seventh team member, because mm-hmm. people would come to it and go, I don't know what this is because I haven't heard of it, especially in Springfield where no one had heard of the site. I don't know what this is, but it doesn't look like the Springfield News Leader. It doesn't look like KY3 television. I don't know what this is, but I'm going to pay attention to it for a second. And anything that we can do in journalism to make people pay attention for an extra 5 seconds, 10 seconds, is a good thing, because it gives us those extra couple moments to say, this is something maybe you should pay attention to and care about.
Let's talk about the focus of it. You know, one of the great, long-term goals or things that people are striving to is local, hyper-local, doing mm-hmm. it well. And you know, it, trying to strike that balance in coverage, that's something that a lot of the smaller papers and news outlets are kind of struggling with. You know, how can we do it and maintain our, you know, viability as mm-hmm. a business, et cetera. Again, how many communities did you do with the...
In Springfield, well, Biloxi and Springfield were the two bureaus we did. But in Springfield, we talked about a lot of different cities around the Ozarks, but Springfield was our main focus.
So what was it you were thinking as far as when you put these assignments out? Would you just say to your reporters, go out and find interesting stories? Or did you say, okay, we want to make sure we touch on, you know, businesses, we want to touch on schools, or we want to talk on, you know, education or healthcare or jobs or whatever? I mean, did you have that sort of degree of, assignment?
We had a couple things in mind. One was, there's a group down in the Ozarks called the Community Foundation of the Ozarks, this giant nonprofit that's really unlike anything you'll ever see. They run the nonprofit scene for the entire Ozarks region, like 43 cities, a couple $1 million in endowment. Anything that happens in the nonprofit world, they run. Mm-hmm. And so they have this, and they cover this massive area of, basically an area, imagine the entire D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia region. Imagine that. They run that. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so they have a really large audience, and they also come to, at the end of the year, they talk to all their cities, and they say, what's on our minds? and they put together this, they call it the, it's red flags and blue ribbons, is this, this big report, and they say, this is the good and this is the bad.
Right.
The good, we had more progress in building, you know, a stronger community for businesses. We had some excellent outreach efforts in the nonprofit world to help these communities, the poor, the needy, the sick. The bad news, domestic abuse up, child abuse up, meth abuse up.
Right.
How do we fix these problems? And so I'd sat down early on with the folks at CFO, and they'd given us this report, the Community Progress Report is what it's called. And we'd gone through and went, oh, so this is really what we need to focus on. These are the big issues.
I was an editor at a community newspaper, or a chain of community newspapers, for 10 years, and I really came to appreciate community journalism. And a lot of people, especially young journalists, when they get into it, I want to cover international politics. I want to go to Washington. I want to write about this. But community news is so important. It's so relatable. And I think this sort of speaks to what you were talking about before, about, you know, telling the small story to reflect large. And I know a lot of people are concerned when newspapers are cutting staffs and the resources are stretched so thin. And so, you know, I think the type of thing, the reporting that you're doing, I think, you know, that speaks a lot to that type of, journalism that people are concerned is disappearing from mainstream media.
Yeah, and it comes back to the focus for these news organizations. What is it that we do? Who do we serve? In Springfield, we had this idea. I couldn't believe I'm still a little thrilled with myself on this one. All those years of watching The Simpsons turned out that paid off. There is, if you go into any college dorm, you will see a poster someone will have of this. All the Simpsons characters, and Marge and Homer and the family will be right in the middle, and then every character who's ever appeared on The Simpsons, all, you know, 10 billion of them, are on this poster. And Marge and Homer are at the middle of, they're at the middle of it, and we were looking at that poster and saying, all right, well, that's imaginary Springfield. This is real Springfield.
Right.
But when we do a story on someone, let's figure out where they are on that kind of Simpsons map. Where do they fit in? How do they connect back to the heart of this city, and so the Homer and Marges, where do they fit? And whenever we did a story and we started to get away from it and we started to write for a larger audience, or the stories were going, well, this is the kind of story that wins awards. Well, hang on, guys, let's pull back. We're not doing this for awards. We're not doing this for money, obviously. Mm-hmm. We're doing this. We're doing this because there is an audience here in Springfield that we serve. Who are these people and where do they fit in? Let's make sure we tell that story, because if we do that, then people can buy in a little more. Oh, I know why I'm reading the story. It's about my neighbors. It's about my community. It's about the things happening to our community that matter and that are changing who we are. Mm-hmm. The Ozarks is experiencing huge change. They are going from this manufacturing-based economy to something very different that they haven't quite figured out yet. So that's a little like journalism, in fact.
Yes.
And they don't really know where they're going yet, but they're trying to figure out their story. We wanted to go down there and help them shape a little more about where they are going. What is their story? And it's the same thing, to bring it back to something you were saying about the design of the site. When you go to the drop-down menu, it doesn't say, you know, business, world, sports. It says the story of the neighborhood, the story of the town square. We decided that people had gotten used to seeing this, you know, business section. They know what the business section is. If you open the newspaper, you're going to see the Dow Jones and what happened with the euro today. And
expectations about whatever that section is, as opposed to being able to identify with it.
Yeah,
the contents.
People have expectations, and so they know, oh, I don't read that section, and they tune it out. If you want to see something funny, go to any hotel in the morning and watch someone flip through USA Today, and you can look at the tables, and you'll see the person who reads the news section, the person who reads the business section, the person who reads the sports and the life. And you can see right away, they open up USA Today, and they know which section to reach, though. It's like, oh, it's the fourth section is the one I read.
Right, right.
They reach, pull, and the rest gets left on the table.
Right.
I don't read those sections. Not for me. And we said, well, some of these people they do care about these stories. They just don't know it yet. So let's try to rebrand it. This isn't the story of local news, because you kind of tune out local news sometimes. This is the story about your neighbors. These are the people in your neighborhood who are trying to make an impact in this way. This is the story. The town square was issues in the political realm, issues in the social realm, whether or not it was Springfield passing a big smoking ban ordinance, the impacts of that, where the money was coming from, and why it mattered to people down there. to issues like this, this debate that was happening all summer about gender. There was a debate on the table in Springfield. If you're applying for a job, if you're applying for housing, protected groups include the elderly, the disabled, veterans. One of the groups that doesn't exist is the LGBT community. You can technically be discriminated against. If you can be told, I'm sorry, we can't hire you, you're gay. And you have no recourse against them. So they're making, or they're going through this series of laws to try to make the LGBT community one of the protected communities. So they can't be discriminated against. This was a huge debate in the Ozarks, as you'd expect. People for and a lot of people against. And this was an issue in the town square we wanted to make sure we covered and tapped into. An interesting example, one of my favorite stories from the summer was a story we did in Joplin, Missouri. Joplin is about an hour down the road from Springfield. And it wasn't a story actually about the Joplin recovery. One of our reporters, Roman Stubbs, who is from Montana, and after Story.us, he's now working for the Washington Post here in town. He's covering sports for them. But Roman decided really early on that he wanted to do a story on religion in the Ozarks, specifically Islam in the Ozarks, and how people react to it. And he spent a couple months trying to find the right angle. And about mid-July, there was an incident at a mosque in Joplin, Missouri. A guy showed up at 3 o'clock in the morning. They have him on videotape. He showed up with some firecrackers, threw them onto the roof, and tried to burn down this mosque. It's a very small mosque. It's maybe about 50 families. Their imam is actually originally from Indonesia, went on a Fulbright scholarship to Arkansas, then led a 3,000-member congregation in New York and said, well, that's not enough of a challenge. I'm going to move to the Ozarks and try to lead the Muslim community there. Really interesting guy, the Imam Lamuddin. And so they had this thing happen where a local man tried to burn down their mosque, didn't succeed. The place didn't burn down. And then a couple days later, it's Ramadan. That starts, and they continue with their Ramadan celebrations as is. And Roman spent a couple of days there with some families, with the imam, just seeing what it's like to be in this community after this tragedy. And then one day we wake up in the start of August, and I log on to Twitter, and I see this report out of Joplin, which is that the mosque has burned down and that someone from the community has come again and has burned down this mosque. And it's about 6 o'clock in the morning, and the entire team I had housed, and we'd housed in a couple of apartments down in Springfield. So I literally walk upstairs at 6 o'clock in the morning, knock on Roman's door. And one of the things you, for the record, don't want to do at 6 o'clock in the morning is yell the word fire, fire, fire. Don't do that. So I was trying to figure out, how do you explain
climb out his window in his underwear.
How do you explain at 6 o'clock in the morning, we need to get up and drive to Joplin? And we got Roman up, the team, we made a plan. We said, this is the story we're covering today. You know, we're putting everything else on hold. Roman has been with these families, has tapped in these communities, has all this background. Nobody else had. And this is a story of so much. When you see a disaster like that, when you see a catastrophe like that, the story focuses on, are they mad? Are they angry? And what happened? Are they going to catch the guy who did it? And we were saying, well, what about the families? What about the people who, it was still Ramadan. What are they going to do tonight? Where are they going to go?
It's so funny with something like that. The national news will pick up on that story and say, oh, there's a mosque that's burned down in Joplin. And they'll look at it through the lens of the national debate. But they may interview, you know, the imam and a couple of family members. But they're not going to look at it from the same perspective of you, because you're there and have talked to these people.
I mean, ultimately, these stories, we focus on the fire. We focus on the guy who burned it down. We don't focus on the people who are affected. Where are these people in the community, and how are they going to go about their lives right now? So, and that was a story I'm incredibly proud of. Roman and I, we went down. The rest of the team was in Springfield making calls. We pulled together in a day, like a 3,000-word massive piece. Source it going all the way from the fire, the first one, the second one, Roman's visits, where it all fit in, and what this community was doing to rebuild. And the response, that story got a response pretty much unlike any story we did all summer, from especially from members of that community who had seen, there had been a photo that the AP had run that day of the imam, and he's a very calm guy, remarkably calm. Right. We're there 2 hours after this thing burns down, and
what are you going to do?
He's there, very calm. It's fine. We'll rebuild. We have other things to do today. We got to know where the community is, and we have to go about our. We have to continue with Ramadan. Incredibly calm. He's standing in front of the charred remains of his mosque. I couldn't believe he wasn't angry. Very calm guy, no emotion whatsoever. If this is God's will, this is God's will, was his message.
Right.
And the AP had run this photo of him, and his head is in his hands, and the photo is supposed to be the photo that says, here is a man who is very upset and crying.
Right.
Except we were there during the process. We never saw him cry. We never saw him upset. Yeah. Rome and I had the same reaction, which was, oh, they found a moment where he was, like, wiping his eye or wiping dust out of his eye or something, and then they blasted that photo to 100,000 news organizations around the world, and everyone said, here is the photo we expect of the guy upset. But that wasn't the story. That's not him at all. That was a moment that got taken kind of weirdly out of context, and it was really upsetting to see because they missed this guy and his narrative and why they go about – it's not an easy place to be a Muslim.
Sure.
It's that Joplin community is really remarkable in all of the efforts they've done, especially after the tornado. The way they've come together, I mean, I'll tell you, that mosque after it burned down, they had a campaign on Indiegogo. They raised $400,000+ to rebuild the mosque, coming from that community and just the response of people saying, this is not something we tolerate. But it's still not an easy place. That is the Bible Belt, and there are some pretty strong beliefs there. And these guys still go about their lives. We wanted to make sure we tapped into those stories. We wanted to make sure we told their story. It is their story. So
that's something you said sort of made me think, you know, when you're a journalist, you'll get a charge if the story gets picked up by the AP or if, you know, something turns out to be big or something. But actually the things that mean the most to you as a journalist are when you've done something, you've told the story right, you know that you've told the right where maybe other people haven't. And then also that the people who it's about, who, you know, who were struggling through whatever, feel that their story has been told correctly.
Yes. That's exactly right. It always comes back to that. When you hear from the people whose story it is,
right,
that they feel that you have done right by them, they feel grateful that their story is out there and that the story is told the way that they would want it to be told.
Mm-hmm.
They feel an investment in that. They feel an investment in you as a reporter and your news organization. We don't get a lot of that in journalism. It's it's a very cynical field that we can often be in, especially when you get into the larger political scene and it can be a little bit vicious.
I can tell you all the things that I feel that I feel good about are not really big stories, but they were important stories for a small number of people.
Absolutely.
Well, it kind of brings it back to, so, I mean, how do you move forward? Would you have a project that's so hyper-local and you have these great sources and you've spent all this time in this community and you've partnered, you know what I mean? Like, you've really cultivated it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you take that and go somewhere else with it? I mean, do you still have people in Springfield?
As far as people down there, the rest of the team has really dispersed. And we're at the point right now where we're trying to take some of the big lessons and get those out into the hands of news organizations. Next week, we're going to release a big report on our blog of the big takeaways of what we learned and what we saw and what other news organizations can take from us.
Mm-hmm.
I personally would be thrilled if news organizations said, oh, that thing that Dan and his team did was really cool. We want to steal that. Please, by all means, take the stuff.
Theft.
Because theft is a very flattering thing. But really, we need to be willing as journalism organizations, as newsrooms, as reporters, to recognize when something works. One of the best things we saw was untraditional partnerships. The partnership with the library system was not something that you would expect to pay off. A lot of people have a preconceived notion of what librarians are, what libraries do. This one down in Springfield is fantastic. They have great meeting space. They have a ton of locations. They have a really good reputation in the community, and they make things happen. Their big paper is the Springfield News Leader, Gannett owned. Their big TV station is KY3TV. They have been the stakeholders in town for years, but they're changing. The nature of what they do is changing. Their staff is shrinking. And so the stakeholders who always used to exist don't exist anymore in that old way. We need new stakeholders in the conversation. And maybe it's going to be people like the Community Foundation of the Ozarks or the Springfield Green County Library System that wants to step up and be a stakeholder in our conversation. Mm-hmm. If we lose the ability to have discussion, to distribute information, and we lose the spaces where people can have these important conversations, we lose what it is that's really essential to local journalism. Mm-hmm. That's really dangerous. I mean, everyone talks about we're cutting pages or cutting staff. That's one thing. If we lose the conversation, we are in very big trouble.
Yeah.
These communities cannot lose that. And so much of Story.us was about that. So to answer your question, it's a lot of it's going to be about trying to find ways to take what we did and bring it to other newsrooms to start rebuilding those conversations, to start finding the new partners and the new people who want to engage.
Well, and maybe this is a good point to sort of bring in this other thing that you're working on, Tools for Journalists.
Tools for Reporters.com.
Tools for Reporters.com. You know, I wrote that down as Tools for Journalists. Gosh.
Not an issue.
Got to check my sources. Sorry. but tell us about this. What
Tools for Reporters, when I was out at RJI at Mizzou, my bosses, they saw that I used a lot of different tools on a mm-hmm. day-to-day basis. And they weren't really sure what they were, but they knew that I should have a place to kind of dump them and put them.
Mm-hmm.
So Tools for Reporters is all about trying to serve a very specific audience, reporters and storytellers. How do you make their lives easier with little things? So every week I deliver a tool into your inbox. This is entirely newsletter-based.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you want it, sign up. You go to the website, you sign up, and once a week you get an email from me that says, this is the latest tool. Here's this one thing that can make your job as a reporter, as a storyteller, a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
I love this idea of having kind of the Batman tool belt, you know, where you have the 50 different things, and you're like, all right, I really
need utilitybelt.com.
Exactly. You want the utility belt. And what can I do? All right, and I'm in this situation. What do I need to get this thing done? Where do I go? And you want to have kind of those tools at your disposal. And that's what this is all about. And trying to serve these reporters who need help. We mm-hmm. all want to do better reporting. We all want to tell better stories. Nobody's out there like, I'm good. I'm topped out. I'm not getting any better. Everyone needs a couple things that can help them go to that next level.
Well, I think we've talked about a hell of a lot, and I'm really glad you came in. It gave us a lot of things to think about. Sum up, where do you want to go? Where do you think journalism ought to go?
Those are two very different questions.
Just a couple of questions before you leave.
Just before you go, what is the magic answer to journalism?
Yeah, tell me.
And do you have it?
Somebody comes up to you from, you know, just out of college, or somebody is at a newspaper and has been told that he needs to blog or whatever. You know, what advice do you give to somebody who wants to do something different and explore something new in journalism? What would you say to them?
Okay, well,
there were three questions there. Okay,
for me personally, I'm going to tie in one and three first.
Okay.
For me personally, the next thing is answering a simple question, which is, how can I help? With mm-hmm. Tools for Reporters, simple thing, but how can I help people do a better job? Mm-hmm. I have a lot of the stuff at my disposal, and I want to build a community of people who want to help themselves mm-hmm. and who want to do better reporting that can serve our world. That seems like a relatively simple goal, but mm-hmm. you know, an email a week, hopefully this is going to help push us in the right direction slowly. Mm-hmm. It's a small thing, but I'm all about trying to put a dent in the universe in any way I can. So mm-hmm. that's one way. To answer the question of what do I tell people when they ask me for help, for advice, people are always scared to start. And I know when I left my job in Texas, in San Antonio, to do this thing in Biloxi, it was not just crazy, it was borderline insane. But people are always scared to start. They're always afraid to take the first step and then to take the series of steps afterwards.
Right. Those other steps are actually a little easier after that first one.
Sometimes. You know, everyone thinks that once you get the first couple steps down, like the rest is coasting. The challenges are different. The mm-hmm. obstacles change. It gets harder and gets weirder. But once you know you can take the first couple steps, you can always keep going. You know, there's a couple things I really think you need to do good work. You need to be willing to hustle. You need to have a lot of passion for what you want to do. You need to have the time to do it. Surprisingly underrated. Everyone says, I have this great idea. If only I had the time. Well, that's an obstacle. You need to have the right team behind you, that tribe of people who says, this matters. We care about this. What Narratively did, and with their Kickstarter and getting 500 or 600 people backing, great. What Homicide Watch just did,
right.
Hundreds of people backing them and all the support, great. That shows an audience that's loyal, that cares, that wants to support it. Mm-hmm. You need that. And you need the right tools, too. You do need to get something like this off the ground. You need to know what it is that I can use to get to the end and what's going to help power me. All those things have to come into play, but you also have to be willing to just take the first couple of steps and be willing to screw up. Like I said, when I started Story.us, I was thinking it was going to be some massive new syndicate that was going to take on the AP one day. Not that there's anything wrong with the AP, but I thought I could do a little better. And if I was still chasing that, it would be a very different conversation today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to be willing to change along the way and be flexible.
Sometimes self-delusion is a useful tool.
Oh, I wouldn't have started this thing if I wasn't a lot delusional. I wouldn't be here today. So much of why I started this thing was a frustration with the stories that I was seeing and frustration with the place that I had in the journalism world. You know, it was 2010. I said, I don't understand why there are conversations happening about the future of journalism and I'm not a part of them. Mm-hmm. Why don't I have a say in this? And how do I get to a place where I can have a say in this? Because this is what I care about. This is what I want to be doing for the next 20, 30, 50 years. I want to be involved in telling great stories that power our world. So I got to get into the conversation pretty fast, or I got to find something else that I'm passionate about and get out. And so that's where Story.us came from. A lot of frustration and a fair amount of delusion.
I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Dan, thanks so much for joining us. And you can find this podcast and more about Dan's project on itsalljournalism.com. And, of course, you can find his work on Story.us. Thanks for listening.